Okay, it's 2 minutes early, but we got a full room. Okay. So I'm going to speak for 40 minutes, I guess. Happy to answer any questions. My name is Rich Sauls. I work for Akamai Technologies. Part of what Akamai pays me to do is be on the OpenSSL development team and also work on IETF projects. So I'm going to talk about the crypto changes mainly in TLS 1.3, this being a crypto workshop, no hard math. And I'll also talk about IETF process because it may not be something most people here are familiar with, and it's interesting. Okay, if you got questions, raise your hand. I'll stop talking and come to the mic. Or you can stay where you are and I'll repeat it for the purposes of the mic. And they're still streaming in. Wow, okay, we'll wait another. Wait a minute. Scattered seats throughout. As people nod off while I'm talking, you can push them out and take their seat. Okay, let's start with the timeline. There we go. So TLS 1.0 was a slight modification of the original SSL protocol by Netscape. It was published in January 1999. The predecessor was called SSL 3. SSL 1 and 2 never really saw any exposure to the outside world. There were internal working documents of Netscape. Okay, is this any better? All right. Okay. Okay, better? I hope. Good. Okay, so TLS 1.0 was published in January 1999. It is basically the same as SSL 3. It is weak, it is bad, it has no good ciphers, and it is still in use on the internet. Okay?
Tell us how you really feel.
Yeah. Well, I really feel ashamed that I have to support it. As my boss likes to say, well, we want to take their money. For example, there are embedded devices, and this is not Internet of Things. This is $10,000 plus print multifunction printers who phone home every night to get software updates, but apparently can't update their protocol stack. I am not speaking for my employer in case there's any doubt. Okay. TLS 1.1 came out 7 years later. It had some reasonable functional improvements. We want to kill both 1.1 and 1.0 and 1.1 off, but we can't. If you look at, you can look at Alexa or you can look at Google. I'm sorry, Mozilla has some metrics. If you search for Mozilla telemetry, you can find out what protocol versions are in use. TLS 1.2, which we in the web PKI world, and the web PKI world is a handful of modern browsers and the servers that they talk to. The handful of modern browsers are, you know, to pick the dominant ones, Chrome, Firefox, maybe Opera in some instances, Edge, no longer IE, and Safari. And if you took those five, that would probably account for 95%+ of client use on the web on the internet. So let's think of the web PKI as that use model. Since 2008, there were a whole bunch of other new RFCs, new cryptography, various national standards, Camilla from Japan, Seed from Korea, Gost from Russia. It used to be, there was this famous Frank Zappa quote, "You weren't the country unless you had a national beer." In the crypto world, you're not a country unless you have an own national algorithm. And part of this was, I think, because NIST, the US organization, did a great job doing things like DES, Triple DES, and AES. And then it came out that they were played by their advisory agency, no such national scale adversary. And as a result, people sort of didn't trust that anymore, and people wanted their own crypto that they could verify for their own reasons. There's a whole bunch, ARIA, I guess is China, right? There's a whole bunch of national crypto that was defined in a mix of RSCs from August 28 until now. TLS-1-3, the charter for that group, working group within the IETF. If people want to grab these chairs, the panel is done, they can just pull them alongside. I am flattered this room is overflowing. I hope not to disappoint. Was approved in October of 2015, so we're now 2.5 years later, and we're pretty close. Let me talk about the IETF. How many people know how the IETF works? All right, about a quarter of the room. It's divided into three. Basically, the IETF is a home of mailing lists. Okay. No, and it's serious, because what that means is all of the work that's done at the IETF, outside of the bars when they meet, is done on the mailing lists. And no action counts unless the mailing list has a chance to look at it. And so that means it's really, really easy to participate in the IETF. It's divided into areas: security, operations, DNS, routing, which covers things like IP, BGP, stuff like that. DNS, the naming system. Security, the area where I spend most of my time. Each area has 1 to 3 directors, and the directors oversee all of the working groups. The IESG, the Internet Engineering Steering Group, is all of the ADs. And I have a flow chart that'll talk about this, show this in a little more clearly. But the ADs approve the working groups, and they appoint the chairs. The working group chairs run the discussions and appoint the people to write the documents. So the flow of control starts at the top and goes down. An area director cannot influence what a working group does, except they can say yes or no and approve it as one of a peer group. And they can't control what gets put into documents. Okay, so it's really very egalitarian that way. The document flow is bottom up. Authors, individual contributors, people who, everyone is recognized as working for a company, but you don't, your affiliation is as an individual. The company affiliation is only mentioned to handle intellectual property issues. The authors write documents, submit them to the working group. The working group discusses it on the mailing list. These days, a lot of documents are written and published as on GitHub, and people on the working group, anyone else, to join the working group, you just join the mailing list. People on the working group will often make pull requests saying, oh, you shouldn't have done that, you should have done this instead. And so this will go around multiple iterations. Eventually a draft will be published. A draft could be like a 1 or a 2 draft. Some documents could go up to many, many drafts. TLS is currently at draft 20. And they're generally fairly substantive changes between drafts. And I'll talk about some of them in a little bit. Once the working group has said, yes, we approve this document, and the working groups work by consensus. The IETF meets 3 times a year globally. And consensus is handled this way. We're going to do it as an experiment. I'm going to ask a question, and then we will poll the room to see if we have consensus. How many people the question will be, do you understand what I've just said, or do you not understand? Please hum if the answer is yes. Please hum if you do not understand. Okay, so we've had a fairly strong consensus that people understood it. But the purpose of humming is you can't look around the room and see who else has raised their hand. So it's not a vote and there aren't ways to influence it. You can't actually tell if you're standing here in the front of the room who was humming one way or the other. And one hum is generally not louder than any other hum. It's a weird kind of nerd thing, but that's the way they work. Once the working group has approved the documents, they go to the IESG. As I said, that's all the area directors. They will review it. They will discuss it. They can send it back to the working group if there's fundamental problems with it or important problems with it. It could get sent all the way back to the authors to fix them. Once the ISG is done, it gets put out for a last call review for anyone on the IETF mailing lists. The RFC editor then goes through and fixes all the typos and makes it follow the formal structure. This is a person who is a couple of people. They're real librarian types. They get, they follow the Chicago Manual of Style and all the document formats, so everything looks great. And then you end up with an RFC where you have special words like must and may and should and things like that. So that's basically how the IETF works. The goals, when the working group was charted about 3 years ago, was encrypt the handshake as much as possible. We wanted to add a lot more privacy to TLS. We wanted to make it faster. We wanted to reduce the latency. Right now, when you make a TCP connection, the client talks to the server sends an ACK back, so there's one round trip. When you want to then do TLS on top of that, the client talks to the server sends something back. Now you've got an ACK, so there's two round trips before you've even sent the simple get slash HTTP 1.0, get me the top of the web page. So we wanted to reduce those round trips. Payload protection is we wanted to make it more secure so that an adversary who was looking, just passively watching the network, capturing all the traffic, couldn't figure out what was going on without a great deal of work. We wanted to look at the things that were in the handshake. Why do we have the time sent? There's no server should have their own clocks. The time is useless. It's in particular, mixing it into the entropy is a really bad thing. We wanted to make TLS, as I said, 1.3 more privacy friendly. Okay. So let me talk about the crypto improvements. We only use elliptic curve Diffie-Hellman. Diffie-Hellman Classic is also supported. No one will use it because it's too expensive, which means that every connection, with one big exception I'll talk about, has perfect forward secrecy. In prior versions, you could do PFS on the connection, but the default case would be the client would send something encrypted with the server's private key. And the server's private key was always an RSA key, 1K, 2K bits, which meant that if that key was ever disclosed, you could decrypt all of, or cracked, you could decrypt all of the traffic that anyone ever used talking to that server. Because from there, you could leverage and get the session keys. From the session keys, you get all the session traffic, and so on. Right? So we wanted to change that because the IETF believes, accurately, that global passive monitoring is a threat that we want to counteract. Most things in the TLS handshake are encrypted. The one thing that is not is the name that the client sends when it's talking to the server. When everything is encrypted, it connects to the server. The server needs to know who you're talking to, in particular when you have hosted instances, the way most of the world is these days, where you have one physical server hosting multiple instances. You either have to give every single client their own IP address, which is expensive if you're IPv4, not totally practical if you're IPv6, or you have to have the client give a hint to the server who it wants so it can find the right certificate, the right key share, and decrypt and get it back to you. Or you can have the server decrypt 1,000 times to see who it is. So the SNI is a name indication. In a way, if you say, well, that sort of defeats all of the other privacy we've built, the answer is yes, it does. We're trying to address that. It's a really hard problem. We worked multiple drafts and multiple iterations and multiple face-to-face trying to figure out how to do it. We think we have a handle on it now. It'll come out later on and be forward portable. But for now, when you talk to a server, if there's people watching the network, they'll be able to see who it is you're talking to, even if it's hosted on a CDN like Cloudflare, Akamai, or what have you. The gory details, those are the two curves that are defined, the NIST curve, and for those who don't like NIST curves or like the other performance of X255.19, the man in black there, those are going to be the most common. And in fact, those are the only two that many applications are using. Okay. There's a number of reasons catch me offline where I think why I like 255.19. It's the first systems approach to crypto that I've seen in a long time, designed to make it easy to use and avoid common pitfalls like timing attacks and so on. It's neat. Bulk encryption. So I mentioned earlier in the timeline that there were a whole bunch of RFCs added about all these other crypto algorithms in TLS 1.2. The number of possible algorithms is so big that when a client connects to a server and says, I speak these, and what the server does is the client gives a list of all the crypto it talks, and the server then picks the one it wants out of that list. That list could be so big that it's bigger than 512 bytes, which means the packet could be fragmented or the middle box will choke on it. And there's really no reason for it. What we did is the working group, we looked and we picked three ciphers. Cha-Cha, whatever the numbers are, Cha-Cha 20, Poly 1035, right? AES GCM and AES CCM, okay? So you can have any cipher you want as long as it's one of these five. As an implementer and as a deployer of crypto and as someone who reads and mostly understands the crypto papers he reads, you don't need any others. What the IETF is going to do is they're going to still publish a registry of all the others. And whereas before it would say recommended if it was in a published RFC, now it's just going to say recommended if it's one of these five, or no comment. Okay, that's a pretty big change. And it's causing a lot of issues because every national organization wants their own cipher accepted as a first-class cipher. The cipher suite doesn't specify the key exchange. So whereas before, you might say ECDHA, ECDHE, AES128, GCM, RSA, saying here's how I do the key exchange, here's how I do the encryption, and use an RSA certificate to identify. Now they're all separate. It's like a Chinese menu. When you connect, you say here's the curves for my Diffie-Hellman exchange, here's the ciphers I want to use, and then here's the kind of certificate signatures I accept. Okay. The bulk encryption ciphers, Cha-Cha, AES, AES, CCM, they're all modern, secure, they are only authenticated encryption, so that if somebody twiddles some bits, you can't do timing attacks, you won't even, you'll get to the end and you go, oh, this is wrong, and so on. The dozens of ciphers previously allowed are no longer specified. On authentication, DSA, the digital signature standard, is gone. RSA is still there. We're using PSS instead of PKCS 1.5, although because of the HSM, deployed HSM issues, PKCS 1.5 is still allowed. We've added deterministic elliptic curve signatures for 255.19 and 448 Goldilocks, as it's called. 448 is what, the number of bits? I forget what it is, yeah. 2 to the 448, right? It's gonna take the CAs, the people who issue certificates to your web server, time to catch up to this, okay? So it's forward-looking, unless you've got your own CA at home or you're programming your own HSM or something like that. The pre-shared key cipher suites where I connect, but I use a password where that password could be a binary blob of 128 bits. It happens to be the AES key or the 256 bits. That's now part of the handshake, which means it's also part of the resumption. When you go to a server and you get a session back from them that has all of the state the server needs, you can send that back and you send along the key, and the server can then decrypt it. And then you guys both pick off where you left off. So there were probably about 24 PSK ciphers defined. They all fall out now because PSK, pre-shared keys, and it's really keys, it's no longer a text string, are now part of the basic protocol. That's kind of neat, but it starts us down the slippery slope of what I'll talk about. Other cleanup and generalization. Renegotiation is gone. It used to be that, and this came about in the crypto export control days, right, of the Clinton and other administrations. If you were a bank, if you were a bank and somebody connected to you, you were then authorized to use strong cryptography. So rather than DES, you could renegotiate and say, now let's use really good 128 RC4. got to keep the context, the historical context. So it was also renegotiation. It was also a source of problems. People got it wrong. You could force renegotiation to step down. And that's what Poodle was, the final death knell for SSL 3.0. The server, instead, the three main use cases, the server can explicitly ask the client for its certificate identity. That has nice tie-ins to the HTTP layer, in particular H2, where there's an explicit status code that says, I need to know who you are. And so you can say, hey, do you know who I am? And pass these things back and forth. Every message in the TLS protocol now has a space for extensions. Previous session, someone was asking about certificate transparency. You can send a cert, and you can send extensions with that cert, OCSP data, certificate transparency data, PIV data, whatever it is you need to do. And the extensions go either way. So again, for future proofing, if we need to add additional data for other authentication mechanisms, that's all in the protocol. TLS also supports padding. Since, as I mentioned a couple slides ago, or sort of skipped it, the record structure now encrypts what the record type is. You can send padding data. Some people don't think it's worthwhile, but if you can imagine, who is it? LinkedIn or Twitter does it right now. I think it's LinkedIn. Every image they send you, like when they see someone's profile picture, is always padded out to the same size. That's kind of cool. If you had a large CDN and it padded out all of the content to, say, a 1K byte size, then an adversary who was watching couldn't really tell if you were looking at the front page story or the comics in the newspaper. They can tell now, and people have been able to do some really amazing and scary things just by looking at the message sizes that are going back and forth. It's unclear how useful it will be, but at least it's a knob that's available there for increased privacy. There's only one hash mechanism, HKDF, hash key, I forget, doesn't matter what it stands for. It's used consistently compared to previous versions. So here's an example. In the previous session, someone asked, well, how much code do you have to swap or merge when you're doing older versions and new? Previous versions, TLS 1.1, required a hash of both an MD5 hash and a SHA-1 hash of everything that was sent back and forth. The idea being that if one was broken, well, at least we have the other to fall back on, right? Now we use authenticated encryption, the GCM construct or the poly construct, and we have only one really strong hash mechanism that we use for all other things. So code that before used to have to sort of keep two running totals now only keeps one. So it's much simpler, unless you have a legacy code base in which you have to do the switch to say feed it through both or feed it through one. It's used consistently, and it's also, really importantly, it's used correctly. In the development of TLS 1.3, we had many cryptographers involved. In particular, the H doesn't stand for Hugo and the K doesn't stand for Krawitz, but that's what I think of it. He's the guy who invented this and came up with how we would use it in TLS 1.3. There have been two workshops where cryptographers went and tried to attack it and break it, and they found some flaws. We fixed them, we think. But it's a well-designed, secure protocol. Pardon me? No SHA. There's no SHA in any of the message exchanges. Backward compatibility, you fall back to TLS 1.2 or 1.1. Yeah, you fall back to the old protocol. The other thing that's different is the protocol negotiation is different. Rather than sending, the client used to send a high and a low version that it supported. Now the client sends a list of what it wants. So with a client, a new client, talking to a new server, would send, you know, I support TLS 1.3 and TLS 1.1 because I only like odd numbers. Got to have some reason. Only like prime numbers. I only want prime numbers in my protocol versions. And there's a way to do that that's backward compatible so that an old server will fall back to the right thing. SHA-1 is still possible for certificate signatures, but the browsers are phasing it out even as we speak. Edge, Chrome, Safari, and Firefox, like by the end of the month, will no longer support a SHA-1 based certificate.
So is this telling us that SHA-3 is not good?
No, is it telling us that SHA, I'll repeat, sorry, forget to repeat it. Is it telling us that SHA-3 is no good? No, it's not. It's just that there were concerns about performance and newness at the time the work started. It makes no comment at all about SHA-3. Okay, and in fact, there's other work going on at the IETF to use new signature algorithms that do, for example, use SHA-3. Most of them use SHA-512 because there's a deployed hardware base where they can, you know, get the whatever that 8-letter Intel mnemonic is, right? It's no comment at all on SHA-3. Nobody's found anything wrong with it. They seem like nice guys. Half of them were involved in AES, right? I forget. Yeah. It wasn't ready at the time, and it was felt SHA-512 was a smaller step forward. And in particular, the certificates are all going to be, you know, SHA-512, SHA-256, anyway. Other cleanup. TLS is a service. Daniel might have mentioned about earlier today about wanting to secure the NTP protocol. And one of the ways it'll do it is you'll connect to a specialized TLS server. You'll, in essence, do a handshake, and now you'll have a key to talk to the server, and then bam, that TLS server becomes an NTP server, and you can encrypt traffic that way. Similarly, QUIC, a new UDP-based protocol, developed by Google, being worked on the IETF now. If you ever use Chrome to talk to YouTube, you are using QUIC, even though it says HTTP at the top, it's lying to you. If you get offended, it's in the terms of service that you clicked through, right, when you downloaded the free software. Token binding is a way to leverage a communication. If I've already got a secure connection to the server and now I want to pass that information up to applications that might not use that communication channel, but might want to know that I've authenticated. So these are three common use cases where I want to do a TLS equivalent key exchange, and then get data out. It's fairly obvious and simple and straightforward how to do that with TLS 1.3. It is, I was talking with Mike earlier, believed to be HSM friendly. All of the keys that are generated are generated with a label that identify what the key is used for. So you can distinguish between a long-term session key, session encryption, a ticket encryption key, an application level key, and the HSM could make appropriate design decisions about what it's going to allow to be exported or not. Minor issue of APIs. OpenSSL will do something here. Whether it's how useful it is, how convenient it is to be determined. As I mentioned, renegotiation is gone. There were three use cases for it. I want a client cert, I want to get to a stronger crypto, or I want to rekey. For example, I have encrypted 2 gigabytes with AES, it's now time to rekey, or whatever the number is. Nobody's quite sure what the number is, if it's 2 gig records, 2 gig bytes, if it's 32 gig, whatever. So instead we have separate messages for asking a client to present its identity and to do a rekey. The rekey just rekeys the existing crypto algorithm. Once a session has started and you've picked, you can't change any of the parameters, so that a man in the middle, as happened all the time, can't downgrade you. That was Poodle, that was some other, I forget the other names. There's too many names for these things. It was buggy, it was a source of problems, it was gross. So anyhow, there's only strong, as I said, only strong crypto. It will probably last longer than your HTTPS session ever will, but there are non-HTTP use cases for TLS. Instant messaging protocols, things like that, video streaming. So there's a specific message to encrypt it. Resumption. Okay, so here we start to slide further down the slippery slope. Sessions over tickets. I have that backwards actually, it's preferred tickets over sessions. A session is where the server keeps all of the crypto state, and when a client connects, it says, hey, I'm session number, and it gives you a number. And the server just assumes that you know who you are, and it starts encrypting and decrypting traffic with that session that it stored. A ticket, which pretty much everyone supports these days, is the client connects and says, when it connects via the initial hello message, it says, oh, and you can give me a ticket if you want. At some point, it used to be in the initial handshake, now it could be at any point in the communication, the server will send a message that says, next time you talk to me, here's a ticket to use. All of that data is encrypted with a key that the server has. And the server will keep that. That session, browsers will keep it for like 25 hours. That session may not be any good because you may get, because of load balancing, directed to some other server. It may be on your phone, and now before you were at home, and now you're in the office, and so you'll be in a totally different networking construct. But it's very much like a pre-shared key, okay? The client sends you all the data, and you as the client have to hold on to it, and then you try to use it. So a session is like a pre-shared key. A pre-shared key is like resumption. If you're reconnecting, you send the ticket with the resumption. And now you have what's called zero RTT, zero extra round trips, early data. In the normal case, the client connects, the client and server do a Diffie-Hellman key exchange. The client remembers what the server sent as his part of the key share. Next time the client connects, he could send a session ticket, or he could send application data encrypted with that client, with that server's key share. Okay? Now I know I'm talking to the same server, so it's encrypted. Unlike you avoid an extra round trip, right? You have to do a round trip to connect via TCP, and then you have to do a round trip to connect via TLS, and then you start to send your data. Well, I've cut out that, so I've cut in half my latency. Okay, so I have shaved an extra round trip. I have heard that large search engines have done the math, and they know how many more millions of dollars per day they'll make if they can cut down that latency and get you to the search page quicker. In particular, if what you're doing is a get slash question mark and search queries, and it fits in a packet, you could send your query on the very first thing, and then the server will start to ship back to you its web pages that have your search results. Okay. It's less latency. The web is faster. We all make money quicker. The cell phones, except maybe the cell phone operators with limited data plans. But you can start to get results quicker. Okay, because what you've done is you've connected to a server before. Most people in the morning say they have a pool of servers. You know, they have the tabs they open up to see what happened in the news. If anything interesting has happened in the past week or two, let me know. That was a joke. thanks. right? Somebody got it. But people, or you could, or in a branch office, you're connecting to the home office application, or you're connecting to your bank, or you're connecting, you know, to your, the sports news, or whatever it is. Many people have common servers that they talk to most of the time, their email provider. And if they talk to them on a more or less daily basis, they can get a ticket, the client's session, the client's key share, every day, refreshed. But if somebody captures that data, okay, that's not a my personal feeling, that's not a typo on the top line. There's no perfect forward secrecy. That ticket, that key share, rather, is used for a day, general. It's used for all clients. And if you can eventually decrypt it, and it's not possible right now to decrypt a, you know, a ECDH key share, but it can be replayed, okay? So for example, I can, in particular for a large service that has multiple data centers, right? If what I'm doing is a post that says, buy Richard Pizza, then I can intercept that message and send it to the Domino's in Arlington, and then allow it to go forward to the Domino's in Tyson's Corner, and Rich gets two pizzas, right? Now, you shouldn't do that, because you should only do it for gets. And you should only do it for what's called safe gets. If you're sending mail, well, you probably don't want to send the same message multiple times. You may want to only do, you know, a get on a slash, or you may want to do something else. The issues come about that if what happens, what goes out in that first packet, or what comes back in that first packet, or what goes out in the first packet is, say, a session cookie that you used before to identify you to the large internet provider, so it can say, welcome, Rich, here's what's in your shopping cart. And it's not perfect forward secrecy, that's an issue. I say five, but okay. Nobody really listened to this until Colm McCarthy at Amazon spoke about this. At this point, it's 3 weeks ago. Now everyone's trying to figure out what to do, because reducing round trips was a part of the charter of the working group. The browsers and the ginormous search engines are going to do it regardless, right? So we have to figure out what we can do. We're trying to put out warnings. OpenSSL, what it does is it distinguishes early data from regular data. So an application that wants to be safe, and this is, yeah, pretty much. An application that wants to be safe, it can explicitly send early data knowing that it's not PFS, knowing it's not fully secure. And a server that wants to read it or not read it will make that explicit decision, as opposed to tying both things into one data stream. The status overall, we're this close to the IESG final review. It'll probably happen in a week or two. It's already gone through one review, what's called working group last call. It got reset. A bunch of changes have been made, mostly some minor wording changes. Draft 20 changed some of the inputs to the hashes. They made the wording smaller and more consistent. You know, app instead of application. OpenSSL does draft 18 and 19, and the master is the latest, which is currently draft 20. On the slides here, if you go to GitHub or you go to OpenSSL.org website, there's download instructions. It interoperates with Chrome, Firefox, everyone who's said it. There was a, Tim, I think, posted on a wiki page about interop things. We interop with all three. There are some blog entries. OpenSSL blog talks about, here are the user-specific changes you'll see. For the most part, if you're using the current 1.10 release, you drop it in and TLS 1.3 will work for free, no problem. The Akamai blog entry before talks about why you'd want TLS 1.3 and how the funding and sponsorship arrangements came about. I just have to put that there because that's my day job. It's based on 110. It will be called 111. It's binary and source compatible. If you want to use early data or you want to use specific curves or change things, then you'll have to make changes in your application. But I want TLS 1.3, and I don't care about the zero RTT stuff because I want to be safe. Drop in the DLL, and it'll work. With that, thanks for your time and attention, and I'll be here, you know, through the rest of the day.
Why the 1.3, not the 2.0?
Why? Why is it 1.3 and not 2.0? Yeah, well, so there's this phrase called bike shedding, which is, I've got, you know, you can get, I want to build a bike shed. Okay, great. And then your whole family dissolves into discussions about what color to paint it. Yes, a lot of people wanted it called 2.0. Some people said, let's call it TLS 2017. Some people, let's call it TLS 9898, right? It's the way it happened. The chairs forcefully drove. We're calling it 1.3. We always called it 1.3. So be it. The chairs, speaking as someone who was there, they refused to consider the discussion until it was too late. I don't really care, but the chairs drove it. Okay, thank you. Oh, sorry, did you have was there one other question? Yeah.
Actually, I did have, what's the latest on the whole zero round trip time and how to deal with this thing that the most recent firestorm?
The latest is Firefox and Chrome are going to do it and merge it. Into one data stream. OpenSSL is going to do it and keep it as two separate data streams so you can manage them separately. We're right, but what's the phrase? You can't fight City Hall. So I don't want to be too cynical about it. I consider it a risky thing. It's in open discussion. There will be more words added to warn people how to do it correctly. What can I tell you? It's going to happen. If you care, take the second bullet.
Thank you, Rick.
Thanks again.
Okay. If there are questions and discussions, please take those outside so our next guest can talk with us.